Welcome back to Copper Country Today. We are heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock on 97.7 The Wolf, 8 o'clock on AM 1400 WCCY, and 9 o'clock on KBAR 102.3. And our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, providing the highest quality in medical care to help their patients live longer and healthier lives. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at our website, which is KeweenawReport.com. Memorial Day is in the rearview mirror, and summer activities are ramping up across the Copper Country. One of our great resources year-round, but especially in the summer, is the Keweenaw National Historical Park. And Tom Baker from the park joins me on this segment of the program. Tom, it's good to have you in again.
Hey, good morning, Todd. Good to be here.
I appreciate your coming in. I guess the first question I have is, who's in charge at the park these days? Mike Flom, who was the superintendent for several years, has moved on to the Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore, as I recall. So who's in charge?
Well, actually, that's a really good question. Mike is the new superintendent at Pictured Rocks, but he is simultaneously still the acting superintendent here at Keweenaw. So he's kind of running two parks while he's absent, though, and over at Pictured Rocks. This month, I'm the deputy acting superintendent. It's going to get really long, you know, sooner or later.
You're going to need a bigger business card.
Yeah. But, you know, we kind of take turns throughout the staff being acting in Mike's stead and just kind of taking care of the day-to-day details of running the park.
Is this a permanent situation, or will a full superintendent eventually be named?
Eventually is probably the operative word there. The job announcement did close a couple weeks ago, so they're in the process of sorting all that out and lining up interviews, and hopefully we will actually have a new superintendent here in place, I'm hoping by September.
Okay, so this is a process that takes a while then.
It really does. They're typically vetting candidates that are deeply entrenched in other national parks, and so they need time to wrap up their work there, make the transition, get moved up here, get their family settled in, all that, and then get on board.
And this has to be a little bit different in terms of an assignment in the National Park Service, because in most national parks, your first concern has to be your territory. And we don't have a lot of territory in the Keweenaw National Historical Park.
And that's an interesting way to put it, Todd, because, you know, the legislated boundaries of the park are 1,860 acres. The National Park Service actually owns about 147 acres, six buildings.
This ain't Yellowstone.
This is not. But then on the other hand, because of the authority of the Keweenaw National Historical Park Advisory Commission, which Congress gave them authority to expend funds across the entire Copper Country, it really, for all intents and purposes, is an 800,000-acre national park.
But you don't have authority over the 800,000-acre national park. You have authority over your little – and then you have, as we've talked before, you have all of these partners, these partner sites, which are independently run. Whoever comes in probably has to be politically savvy?
Definitely. They need to be good at relationship building. This was – when the park was started in 92 – this was a very new model for a national park, and it's actually being seen as a very successful model, and more national parks are heading down the partnership path.
Yeah, I see a few more parks along our model have been established, and I think some other existing parks are also now kind of reaching out in this partnership program.
Definitely. Even the old established parks, right from Yellowstone, the very first national park, right on through. Partnerships are a very strong initiative within the National Park Service. With dwindling federal monies available to administer parks, we really need to be looking toward partners and get a lot more public-private partnership going on to help support the national parks, our country's treasures.
It was a long and cold and hard winter. How did the park and the various sites associated with it hold up?
Probably better than I.
Well,
I have to tell you, I've lived in the UP for 39 years, and I've never seen anything like it.
I mean, as we speak, there's still ice in Keweenaw Bay, and I've never seen anything even close to that in my years of association here. I know I talked with the folks from the Isle Royale Park, and it really set them back because, of course, they couldn't get the ship out, the Ranger 3. They couldn't get that out on the lake, and everything was socked in, so they were running behind schedule. I suspect maybe things were not as adversely affected for you folks.
Not really. Whether or not we just plod along, you know, like good Upers should, and we just go about our business and, you know, try to ignore it as much as we can and try to not have it adversely affect what we do.
But you do oversee a number of sites that are in, shall we say, various stages of repair. Some are in good shape, some are pretty much ruins almost at this point. Was there any problem that any of them had with the winter because of the heavy snow and the severe weather?
It's interesting because there wasn't as much adverse effect as what I would have assumed that there would be, especially considering that I've seen like brand new structures that are flattened by the snow load this year. Relatively speaking, our historic structures held up really well. That being said, we also have a variety of new leaks to deal with and those types of things. You know, roofs are always an issue with historic structures. And, you know, trying to help our partners keep all of their historic resources together and upright and, you know, that's just all in a day's work.
Go into the relationship that exists between you and the partner sites. Do you support them financially?
Actually, we support them more with technical assistance by providing professional services to them. Now, those professional services, the technical assistance services, dollar value is very, very high. We wish that we had the baskets of money to pass around, believe me, but that's not the way the federal government works, and certainly not these days. It doesn't work that way. But like with the Keweenaw Heritage Sites, we actually have formal memoranda of understanding with them between the National Park Service, the Advisory Commission, and each of the 21 heritage sites. And that gives them a higher priority. We try to evaluate historic resources for the level of risk they are and the significance of the resources. And, of course, most of the heritage sites are heritage sites because of the significance of their resources and the, as well as the work that they bring to the table. They just do a tremendous job of interpreting the copper story, and we could never have that kind of reach with the small staff that we have.
What is their obligation aside from that? Do they have obligations to keep the sites in a certain state of repair, to not make changes that would not be historically accurate and such?
In all honesty, it's probably a little more informal than that.
Okay.
We try not to put heavy federal hand on our sites. We don't think it's a fair thing to do. They have a tremendous amount of passion for the resources that they care for. We wouldn't think of standing in the way of that passion or trying to change that passion in a substantive manner. They do a great job with what they do. We do provide guidance when they want guidance, and sometimes, of course, when they don't want guidance, I suppose. but we offer our opinion. It's up to them whether to take that advice or not. And in all honesty, as the relationships have developed, more often than not, we work very closely and very well together.
Tom Baker from the Keweenaw National Historical Park is my guest on this segment of Copper Country Today. You have expanded your hours for the late spring, shall we call it, at the Visitor Center in Calumet, and will be expanding more within the next several weeks?
That's correct, yes. We've been able to go to 5 days a week right now, and then starting June 15th, we will be open 7 days a week this year, which we're very happy about.
That visitor center is a couple of years old now. I went through it when it first opened up, was very, very impressed and very pleased with the work that had been done there. Has it done, now that we can look back over a couple of years, has it done what you hoped it would do?
It's doing exactly what we hoped it would do as far as educating our visitors, bringing people in closer contact with their history, with their heritage, those types of things. Numbers-wise, it can only go up from here. We've had good visitation, but as the word gets out more and more, it's going to bring more and more people into the Copper Country. This is a absolutely world-class visitor center, interpretive center. And the word is really getting out there. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, if a listener has not been there, I certainly recommend that you put it on your schedule for this summer. Go and take a look. It doesn't cost anything to go through.
No. It is free and open to the public. You know what? I really love it when especially local folks talk to me about it. And you know, they talk about, you know, they've been there, you know, 6, 8, 10 times, you know, and they just want to keep coming back.
Yeah, there's so much there. You see something different every time you go through, or in my case, as I've gone through it several times, because I've done some historical reading and research over the past year and a half or so in conjunction with the strike. Now I go back and I see things in a different perspective because I know some things I've learned elsewhere. And all of a sudden, that thing that I didn't mean much to me the first time I was there means a whole lot to me.
Exactly.
Yep. So it's really very impressive, and certainly encourage everybody in the Copper Country to go and take a look at that. Has it really become the centerpiece now of the park? I know that was kind of the goal, was to establish the park's identity there.
That's absolutely correct. You know, it's just kind of the crown jewel of the Keweenaw at the moment, and it's just a fantastic facility.
For those who don't know, where is it?
It's right on where 5th Street meets Red Jacket Road in Calumet, heading into downtown Calumet.
Right on the south edge of town.
Yep.
And it's in the old historical Union Building.
Correct.
The Union Building, and wonderfully redone, and certainly worth going, and bring the kids with you, or the grandkids.
Yep, absolutely.
You will learn some stuff. The one comment that I heard about it, after people went through, was they thought that perhaps it didn't focus enough on some of the controversy that came up, particularly involving the strike. Is that a comment that you have heard or something that needs to be addressed, or were there just a couple of people who were, you know, a little off?
I would never say that anybody's off on any comment that they want to make. We had a very limited space to convey an enormous story and many, many aspects of the story. And what we would like to do is have people make up their own minds about controversy, not controversy. What, you know, it's even among residents, I shouldn't even say even, of course, among residents, it's a very divided issue, many divided issues. And so what we're trying to do is just lay out the basic facts that are there on the table, the historical facts, and people can draw their conclusions in their own way. And that's what interpretation is all about.
And even though the strike was very much top of mind over the last year or so, as we noted its centennial, it was 1 year out of more than 100 that you look at there.
That's correct. Yeah.
So it's been top of mind, but it's certainly not the entire story.
And no, far from it. There's just an enormous, you know, industrial, social, you know, ethnic, you know, immigrant, you know, huge, huge story here in the Copper Country. You know, we're such a more than a microcosm of our nation's history.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing that, and I've said this before, that amazes me is we look at the little backwater that we are today, the little out-of-the-way place, and it's really stunning to see what was happening here 100 years ago when this was the fifth largest population center in the entire state of Michigan.
Indeed.
So you recently completed, the park did, not necessarily you personally, but the park completed a financial report. And I don't want to go, rest easy, dear listener, we are not going to go down all the facts and figures and such in it. But the financial report basically was kind of designed to look ahead 3 to 5 years and plan out where the park is going. What did you learn from doing that report?
Well, first of all, let me clarify, it's not really a financial report.
Okay.
It's a business plan.
A business plan, I'm sorry.
Two very different things.
I misstated, you're right.
No, that's okay. Easily done. Of course, financial reports will bore anybody to death, including me.
Yeah.
And I'm interested.
Yeah.
Business plan, on the other hand, it looks at where we've been, where we are right now, and where we need to go in the future. And we did not approach this business plan in a vacuum where we just had National Park Service people sitting in a room together going, okay, let's see what we should do with this. What we did, we engaged many, many of our non-federal partners throughout the Copper Country. Not just in the two park units, the Calumet and Quincy unit, but all across the Copper Country. And the fellows that led this charge, they were a couple of graduate-level interns that were funded through the Washington office of the National Park Service. They came here, spent an entire summer here, did a lot of legwork. We just put a whole lot into this planning effort, and when I say we, I mean the whole Copper Country. It was amazing the level of participation that we had in this, and it's they boiled it down into a 40-page document, so it's not you know, anything to really lull you to sleep at night, you know, and it's being so voluminous, but it covers a lot of great points. It talks about what the park's operational priorities should be, you know, things like how we enhance the visitor experience in the two units of the park and across the Keweenaw Heritage Sites, which stretch, of course, across 115-mile stretch of the Keweenaw. You know, it always also talks about how we prioritize with preserving and protecting those thousands of at-risk resources that we have here. Because obviously we can't take care of absolutely everything.
There's too much. There has been enough money.
Too much. We need to have good priorities set about that. And in all honesty, it's been a very big challenge for us in that area. It's very easy to get distracted by someone walking in our front door and saying, my building's falling down. What can you do to help me?
Yeah.
And so you really need to have a plan in place, which we're working toward, making progress in that direction. We'd also like to improve just the simple awareness and support of the park, both on a local level and on a broader regional and national level. And then we, of course, always are looking to improve our organizational efficiencies. You know, there's always room for improvement there. I don't care what organization it is.
Absolutely true.
So those are some of the things that we looked at. You know, we looked at some strategies for generating revenue. Now, that's a really tall order for a federal agency.
Well, and especially for one that doesn't exactly have a turnstile that charges admission to get in.
Exactly.
I mean, there are at least there are other national parks. I don't know if they charge admission or not, but at Yellowstone, you got to go through a gate mm-hmm. at some point to get into the park. We don't have a gate.
We have no gates. and it's true that, that there are a lot of national parks that do have fee structures. And, you know, our basic taxes that we pay help ensure that the parks are there. The fees are to help cover the use of the park by the people who are actually using it. So the day-to-day maintenance costs, which are astronomical. You know, you get a park like Yellowstone where you have millions of visitors. The wear and tear on the resource is pretty dynamic.
Absolutely.
You know, so there's good cause for those things. We don't have that type of structure here in the Keweenaw. We don't have a huge federal budget. And given the last several years and the outlook on congressional budgets and funding, we're not likely to pick up a whole lot of funding either. So we need to start looking, okay, where else can we possibly generate revenue? Because, you know, we're in a very negative budget situation here. So, you know, we're looking at different philanthropic groups that could possibly help out the park. One that's currently helping us out is the National Parks of Lake Superior Foundation, and they established themselves to help all five national parks on Lake Superior. So they're a fledgling group. They're working really hard to try to get that whole operation up and running and really sustainable. They have a long way to go, though, and like all of us, we always have a lot of work in front of us.
Are copies of the report available for folks to look at?
They are. It's right online on the park's website, www.nps.gov/KEWE, and you can follow the link from there to the business plan.
What else is coming up this summer? And I want to take a moment to talk about the results of something called Project Sisu that you were working on last summer.
Well, let's do Sisu first,
okay.
Which was really cool. It was a project that we took on as part of a National Park Foundation grant. And we worked with a group of students from the CLK schools. I think it was actually Washington Middle School, if I'm not mistaken. And we worked with some at-risk youth. And kind of showed them around the park and the Keweenaw, gave them a lot of education about their history, their heritage, which I don't think any of them had any connection with before.
That opens some eyes when you do that.
It really does. And they really got pretty enthusiastic.
Good. Good. So, they came up with this. You've got a map that came out of this.
Yeah. The kids picked a variety of their favorite activities throughout the Copper Country, and they constructed a map out of it, and that map's available. It's very family-oriented. Places that we have distributed it to so far have been very enthusiastic in their reception of it.
So that is available at the Visitor's Center and also at your office, I would assume?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Stop
and
by.
At the Welcome Centers and, you know, places like that, KCVB, you know.
Yeah. I want to ask you one other thing before we wrap this up here. Time is getting short. Progress on bringing the Quincy Smelter into the system.
Well, good progress. The Keweenaw National Historical Park Advisory Commission, of course, has launched an effort to purchase the smelter. That is literally within a month or two of actually happening. Along with that, of course, was a tremendous environmental assessment action that needed to take place.
Yeah.
And so that's been ongoing for the past year and a half. The commission has successfully raised all of the funds to purchase the smelter, thanks to the generosity of the community.
So this is going to happen then?
It definitely is.
you're still waiting for the result of the environmental, or what's does anything stand in the way yet?
I don't believe that anything is standing in the way. I think we have all the hurdles cleared. We're waiting for one final. It's actually a redo of the very first environmental assessment succession, because you have to have that within 6 months of the actual purchase date. So we have to have an update done on that, which is going to occur very quickly here.
I'm very glad to hear that. That's a great effort.
Yes, and you know, we can be thankful for the legislation of the park, that the commission has that kind of authority to acquire land, and they can hang on to that land until such a time as the National Park Service is able to accept the transfer from them. That's not going to happen quick. We have a lot more hoops to go through with Washington than that, but I'll tell you, this project has put us on the map in D.C.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that, too. Tom Baker, we're out of time. Thank you for coming in. Appreciate all that's going on at the Keweenaw National Historical Park, and we'll talk to you again next week on Copper Country Today.